Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Leslie.
I'm Tessie.
And we are sister-in-law friend podcasters. We love and are encouraged by female podcasters giving helpful advice on womanhood and motherhood and being a person in this world. Our podcast aims to add to this conversation by turning the spotlight onto moms and women who have inspired us by doing big and bold things with their lives, in addition to being great moms. We feature regular moms that you've sat next to at PTA meetings, or you've helped in the aisle of Target as she was, you know, trying to calm down her screaming toddler and juggling her purchases as well. We've interviewed moms who have started their own international nonprofits from their living room while they're, you know, stepping over Legos and things like that.
On Legos. Ugh. Hurt.
They've come out of really hard times. They've lost loved ones, and yet they've carried on. Their mama bear has carried them through. They've carved out time to make breathtaking art. All kinds of women have been on this show, and what we do every single time is we dive in deep and we ask what makes these women more than mom, and we ask them the questions that we've all been thinking. So we're glad you're here as we share these stories of the people who love being called moms but have also shifted the paradigm that aims to stop there. We are excited because we've got another one of those shapeshifters today.
On today's episode, we have a phenomenal interview with a woman named Kathy Lander Goldberg. Kathy is a photographer and a mom, and on November 17th, she's opening a new exhibit in St. Louis called the Resilient Souls Project, which encourages the inner strength in every woman through portraits and writing. This exhibit is a 20-year follow-up to Resilient Souls, Young Women's Portraits and Words, which explored issues such as disabilities, mental health, unhealthy relationships, illness, adoption, pregnancy, immigration, eating disorders, the gamut, really, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And two decades later, Kathy revisited these women's continued journeys, including their low points, their triumphs, and their growth as they approach middle age.
It's true. We loved our conversation with Kathy because I think she really helped us to see how we could meld our mama bear interests into activism. Mm-hmm. You'll hear that Kathy is invested in helping young women. She's invested in building relationships with them and providing counseling and care to them. She's also a passionate and talented photographer. And one thing I love is how she has melded this talent and this skill together in such beautiful mama bear fashion. Mm-hmm. She brings to life the quote by Frederick Buechner that I will never tire of. The place God calls you is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. I feel like she brings that to life, and she shows mm-hmm. us how we can too.
Leslie, I know that you find true healing through art. This seems to come naturally to you, though I choose to write as my kind of method of healing. Going through the process of creating or painting or making hand-poured candles, as we've discussed, are not my preferred mode of self-care. I do this for you as an act of love.
I know you
but do. But it's just not my preferred mode of self-care. But I love what Kathy opened up to me in terms of art being a reflection of ourselves and a form of healing. Honestly, we talked a lot about the self-portrait. Really, this can be, you know, what's widely known as the selfie these days, and how transformative it can be to think about yourself and what you want to reflect about who you are on film or Polaroid or iPhone or what have you. I love that.
Yeah, I think that it is. It really is the process of whatever it is that we're creating, whether it's candles or a painting or, you know, your self-portrait. It's that process where we really can learn and we really can grow. This portrait, and again, we're going to hear her talk a lot about this, it can be a variety of things. It can be beautiful. Your self-portrait could be abstract. It can be really simple. It can be so many things. But the process of thinking about who you are and how you're feeling and moving through life during this season is really, I think, the most beautiful and healing part.
Leslie, I love that. I love how we talked about just the way you move through life is really the beautiful part. And you and I talked about, like, what would it look like to capture our true essence? And when you and I were talking about this intro, we're like, we want to know what our listeners would capture too. Mm-hmm. So if you're like Leslie and me, and you very rarely are in front of the camera, now we're going to ask you to do it as like this example of total revolutionary, like, self-love, right? And we're going to ask you to have your portrait taken or a selfie taken of something that just you feel like represents you. Maybe it's in the process of stepping on a Lego. We get it. We've all had that painful look, right? We understand. So put it on our Facebook page if you want, if you don't want to share it to kind of your group of people, or if you just post it on your normal social media stuff, make sure you tag Mama Bear Dares Podcast. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, of course. The world has been heavy, but how awesome will it be to see just a whole feed of women celebrating themselves and recognizing the beauty in everyday life? I think this could be incredible.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm already thinking, how do I represent myself right now as, you know, a woman, a mom, a person living in America in 2016? I mean, yeah. The process I'm excited for. I'm excited for our listeners, and I can't wait to see what people post. So for sure, do that. It's going to be great. And you're going to love Kathy. She's wise. Yes. She's interesting. She's simultaneously, she's sensitive and determined, and she has got a mama bear. So let's get into it. Today, we are talking to Kathy Lander Goldberg, a fascinating, intelligent, thoughtful woman who works to create self-awareness through art. The subject is great. But first, we want to tell you this. Kathy is one of our guests who was recommended by a Mama Bear Dares podcast listener. We love it when this happens. I love this story in particular because listener Ellie knocked our socks off with her email description of her friend Kathy. Ellie encouraged us to interview Kathy, saying that she's a friend, a colleague, and sorority sister, and I'm very proud of the work she has done. We love this, you guys, because her work exemplifies what we love to celebrate on this podcast. Friends, sisters, fellow mama bears celebrating their female friends, lifting them up, championing their success. It's such a beautiful thing. So we always remind you there's no cap on beauty and success in this world. So let's lift each other up, just like Ellie has done with her friend Kathy. Ellie, thanks so much for the connection and for exemplifying this mama bear spirit to our listeners. Okay, back to Kathy. Kathy Lander Goldberg is a photographer and licensed social worker. She is the director of Photo Explorations and has worked with children, adolescent females, and adult women for more than 25 years, conducting workshops for schools, camps, and organizations. Her projects and workshops frequently use photography and writing to promote self-awareness and self-expression, a topic that we think is really interesting. Kathy, without further ado, because that was a lot of ado, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
20 years ago, thereabout, you set out to document young women through words and photographs. These were young women who had faced eating disorders, violence, disability, date rape, parental desertion, drugs, poverty, suicide. I mean, everything, every possible thing you can imagine. You were then a 31-year-old St. Louis-based photographer who captured 29 subjects in an exhibit called Resilient Souls, Young Women's Portraits and Words. The show traveled the country and was made up of black and white portraits and accompanied by handwritten essays in which the young women described mastering some challenges in their lives. What was it about, first of all, what an amazing concept, but what was it about your 31-year-old self that was interested in this?
Well, that's a good question. I was working a lot with girls. I was teaching some photography to at-risk teens, both co-ed, but I was in particular close with some of the girls, and would hear things about their lives. And it just made me stop and think, you know, like one part of it was, you know, they would talk about self-injury, they would talk about eating disorders, you know, losses. And one girl in particular, I remember, she was maybe barely 16, and she started talking about, boy, you know, I really wish I would have waited to lose my virginity. Like, you know, like she was so old, like, oh, looking back on things, you know. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, if she would be saying this to somebody else, you know, it would certainly make a lot more impact than if I were to be saying it, you know. And mm-hmm. she wasn't necessarily one of the ones that participated, but it was just the idea that if they could hear it from people closer to their age, some messages about, you know, getting through things, whatever it is, or decisions, that it would come across definitely stronger.
Mm-hmm. You found these women through your practice there, or was it kind of word of mouth how you found these women? And what was the response initially to the exhibit?
Sure. So initially, at that point, I was not a therapist. I actually did not become a social worker. I went back to graduate school after the exhibition. Mm. And it did have that impact on my life. But really, word of mouth. I started with a few of these students. They, you know, had friends, different people from, you know, different ways, kind of heard about what I was doing. I went to social service agencies, put up flyers at universities. So pretty much. And then if I was going to be out of town, I would kind of call ahead to some cities because I wanted to get some geographic diversity as well. Mm. So everybody, you know, was just kind of helping, putting it out there. And again, this is pre-social media, so it wasn't as easy as it is now. So
right.
I know there's quite a contrast, which we'll get to later, because you've tracked these people down again. Yeah. And I'm imagining that social media was a huge part of that. So what was the response to the exhibit at the time? And again, you traveled to different cities. Like what were people saying?
Well, I think the exhibit was very positive. All the feedback I did get from it. What I really loved was, I don't even know if y'all remember this, but Sarah McLachlan had something called the Lilith Fair years ago.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when it was initially here in St. Louis, I think it was the kickoff year in 97, the exhibit had just opened, so we displayed it there. And we happened to bring some colorful post-it notes to have people's responses. And it was just so beautiful, you know, what the images and the words evoked in the viewer. They would write, you know, this experience happened to me too, you know, very positive women-friendly messages about, you know, staying strong, about their own experience, about some of these things resonated with them. So I really enjoyed seeing that. And then also in the guest books at various locations where it was, people, you know, wrote about their own personal resilience and how it impacted them.
That seems like the perfect place, Lilith Fair. Oh my gosh, I totally had forgotten about that. I hadn't heard about it in years. But that is so cool. Did the young women who you captured their image and then had the opportunity to write their story also, did they see that response ever?
So some of the participants did come to the exhibition. When it was in Chicago, we actually had a reading. So probably five of them were from Chicago. So we did a reading at the Harold Washington Library. So they did get a chance to interact with the viewers. And that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. So how did doing this, both the kind of in process, right, the taking the pictures and kind of documenting the stories, and then also showing your work off, how did it change you?
Well, for one, what I do, that was when a lot of my workshops kind of, I started doing more frequently. So when the first exhibition was launched, we set up a bunch of workshops for high school girls, for adult women. And so they would come, we would do writing, they would view the exhibit, they would connect with one of the images or one of the stories, write about it, and then we would use the photography to tell their story, you know, something that they felt they've overcome an obstacle. So as I was doing that work, doing these workshops, and a lot of very personal things would come up. And so it caused me to want to go back to school and get more skills since I was doing these groups, these workshops. And so I chose to become a clinical social worker. So that's how it impacted me in that sense. And then also just meeting with the individuals, you know, I would spend a lot of time hearing their personal stories and just being present and being a witness for what they had to say. So that was very powerful for me as well.
Yeah. So that definitely changed your life, you know, it kind of focused your career path, it sounds like. But what brought you to the initial idea? I mean, were these stories and these experiences, or even is it just the age group? What was it that made you want to dive into the project in the first place?
Well, I wanted to do something preventative. Okay, so where I was teaching these kids, they've already had, you know, gone through so much. Now, some things were beyond their control. You know, some of the subjects, things were, you know, about disabilities, about illness. And so there weren't choices to be made. The choice was how I'm going to handle it. You know, what am I going to do? Yes, I'm in a wheelchair. How am I going to, you know, how's my life going to be with this, you know, the situation I'm in? Mm-hmm. But some of them were about making choices. You know, when a girl would, you know, was an alcoholic and she talked about, you know, how it impacted her family, drugs and alcohol, then my hope was it was going to impact people who saw the exhibit to not go down that road. Same with gangs, you know, same with suicide attempts, you know, that was my hope. Let's do something. What can we do? You know, obviously one person can't do everything, but we could do something.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I guess I'm going to push a little deeper here, Kathy, okay, if you don't mind. So you'd been having the workshops, like, let's back up even further. What made you want to share, you know, your skills in art and your interest in art with this population?
So in the late 1980s, that's how long I've been around, I decided I wanted to do some volunteer work. So I went to a residential center for kids who had been taken out of their parents' homes. You know, they were in residential, some of them have been in foster care. And I started volunteering doing photography with the adolescent girls. And we set up a dark room and, you know, brought in some photo equipment. And it just was such a connection. You know, we would go, we would do some darkroom work and just, they would just start pouring out, you know, things on their mind. We exhibited their photographs, you know, building self-esteem. So at that point, I realized, wait, there's something here. You know, this population really is connecting with the photography. And of course, you can only imagine way before selfies, you know, there was the self-portrait. So however they, you know, these were with regular cameras, not cell phone cameras. They would look for reflections in mirrors and water. You know, they were just itching to take portraits of themselves and see how they appeared to other people. So that's kind of where it started, even prior to my teaching photography with the at-risk. This was even prior to that.
Mm-hmm. That is so interesting. So what initially, like we call it the mama bear instinct, but you chose to volunteer, like you said, what initially made you volunteer? Like what stoked that kind of mama bear instinct that made you want to become involved?
Sure. I was working as a freelance photographer. So, you know, you have time. This is before I had a child. So I had time and I wanted to do some of the photography I was doing was meaningful, but some of it was just kind of like, you know, corporate portraits. I was using my skills, but I wasn't feeling necessarily fulfilled in all the work I was doing. So I think that was the calling. And I think, you know, that's what we all need to do is find something that's going to get us excited and, you know, enjoy our day and look forward to things. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like that a lot. And I love that you said that your mama bear instinct, you know, was kind of poked before you had your daughter, because I think, you know, so many of our listeners, many of them have children and so very literally like have experienced that mama bear, but many of them don't either, but it's still like this universal feeling. So I like hearing kind of that part of your story. And now I have to ask this, because you're a professional photographer and you are talking about like pre-selfie days. Mm-hmm. So can we just talk about selfies a little bit and whether you want to call it like selfies or self-portrait or like just, I'd love to hear from a photographer, like what is the obsession with capturing our own image?
Well, I think we all want to know kind of how other people see us. We can look in a mirror, but that's not quite going to do it. There's something about, you know, lighting, expression, angle. You know, we want to portray ourselves in a certain way to a certain group. And I know we were going to talk a little bit about the Photo Explorations book, which is what that does, is kind of challenge people to use photography, whether doing it with a cell phone, whether setting up a tripod, you know, and a camera, a regular camera, to decide to be in control of what they want to show. And I think it is, a lot of it is about control. You know, somebody can take my snapshot, but if I do it, I can decide which one I want to use. I can decide, you know, do I want all my body in it? Do I want, you know, just my face? Do I want just my eyes? Do I want, you know, what do I want to be wearing? What, you know, how do I want to be, what I want my facial expression? Where do I want my gaze to be? So I do think there can be a lot of power in the self-portraits. I think we can go to the other end too of, you know, obsessively taking, you know, 200 of them before I find one I like. And I do a lot of work with girls and women in body image, not necessarily using photography. But in my therapeutic work. Mm-hmm. I also want to back up, if you don't mind. Womp.
Yeah.
You asked me a long time ago, did I find these from my clients? So I just like to be very clear. Mm-hmm. This was way before I became a therapist. And so I would never use my clinical clients in my photography work.
Okay.
That very separate. Occasionally, I would use photography in a session, in a psychotherapy session, but that would be totally confidential and that would never be shown anywhere.
That's
a good distinction.
Right, exactly. Important to make there. Okay, so I think that satisfies my curiosity. I'm always so like sheepishly taking a selfie.
No, and you all both have daughters, so
right.
And sons, right? So
yep.
How are your kids in the selfie? What do you think about it?
It's funny to me because I was at my oldest's basketball game the other day. Mm-hmm. And what I couldn't believe is I'm like Leslie, when I take one, and it's usually like a Snapchat selfie to show like a new zit that's forming to my friends and and Leslie, you know, but like I am at once so impressed with the boldness with which these mostly young women are taking their pictures. Like at the basketball game, I just kind of looked around at the student section, and at any given time it seemed like there were 20, you know, middle schoolers with their phones up taking selfies. And I thought, that takes boldness just in a group of people to be like, hold on a second, I'm gonna take you know, this picture. Mm-hmm. And then, but it also felt like I was like in the Truman Show. I'm like, this can't be real, right? Is this real? You know, so like I did feel those things. My daughter's only 10, so she's not on social media or anything. And the selfies, she doesn't really take any selfies, I guess. She likes taking them with cousins and brothers, but not by herself.
Yeah, I think you summed it up, Tessie. I think that's my observation too. I mean, we talk with moms a lot about not being in the picture themselves. And I guess I feel, from my perspective, just I am always very sheepish about taking a selfie. And part of me understands that, like, no, I get to be in the picture, like I'm worth photographing, you know. And there's sort of that layer to that, and I agree. I think that there is a certain boldness that can be celebrated, but then you kind of have to watch for that vanity and how you're crafting your image and just the marketing of your persona, you know, to the audience that you have or that you hope to connect with. So it's interesting, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I guess speaking of the age of social media, you have, it's 20 years now since this first photo exhibition, and you have decided or did decide to find the women in the photographs and connect with them once again and photograph them again. I'm assuming you're going to tell us you found a lot of them through Facebook, but I'll let you answer that question. And then just like, what made you want to revisit this exhibition? Because this is a really, the exhibition itself, you know, is fascinating. And I love the idea. And then to revisit, like that just adds a whole nother layer of interest.
Sure. Well, I've always wondered what happened to them. You know, at the beginning, I send maybe some holiday cards back and forth to some of them. You know, every once in a while I get a letter, or back in the day. And eventually, you know, even I did have email addresses for a few AOL email addresses over the years. And I just kind of, you know, life gets busy and, you know, they were living their lives and we just lost touch, including one of the ones who I was actually really very close with, a student of mine, one of the ones I started with. So we lost touch with everybody and always kind of meant to get around to reconnecting. The exhibition has sat in a closet in an extra bedroom in my home, you know, for all these years in these beautiful archival boxes. And I have a file cabinet in my office with all the story, the original story. So it's been on my mind. I was kind of thinking 10 years later, but I was, you know, I had a small child at the time and was busy, you know, with another career. And so I just thought as we got closer to 20, that seemed like a good time. You know, I had more time and why not? So yes, I did use social media, but it's not as easy as you would think.
So, really?
Yes. I mean, I did find many of them that way, not just Facebook, but through LinkedIn was one way. Not everybody's on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And people change their names. So if they were, even though sometimes people put their maiden name, like one of them I had met, she was married, you know, very young, had gotten divorced, and had a different name. So I never knew what her maiden name was. So mm-hmm. I found it. Google is great, though. I found it in a little teeny article, I think, about a second wedding and some small town newspaper. You know, so it really took some private investigating skills. Yeah. And three, believe this or not, three of them I found not on social media, but through their mother's landline from 20 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
One of them, the mom had ported her landline into her cell phone. Another one I called and they were just about to disconnect the landline. The mom was moving. I called her, it was her moving day. They were moving out of the house. She was, you know, the landline was going to go in the next couple of days.
Wow.
So there's been kind of a lot of cool stories like that. One of them, this one I had met at the gay and lesbian homeless shelter in LA years ago, even though she had written me, I had her mom's address, but that was, you know, 20 years ago. So I couldn't find her any other way. I snail mailed a letter to England. What do I have to lose? You know, and about 2 weeks later, I got an email from her. She didn't even talk to her mother anymore. They were estranged, but her sister had gotten the letter to her. And we connected. And so she had changed her first name. So that's why there was no social media presence. She originally was Fiona, and she changed it to Freddie. So that's why I hadn't found her. So she is going to be in the exhibit. Unfortunately, I couldn't go to England to photograph her, but we found a way. We found a way to get her.
That is incredible. I that gives me goosebumps, some of that like kismet type of situations that you experienced.
And actually, it wasn't all positive. So two of them, when I Googled, I kept looking, I couldn't find a social media. Two of them actually had passed away. Mm. So one was a woman who at the time was diagnosed with HIV at age 21. She had lived probably, I want to say, till 34, 35. So I found her obituary and she just did amazing work with women and men, I believe, in LA who were either HIV or had full-blown AIDS. And her and her mother had actually taken people into a home and cared for them. She had done support groups. So her story is going to be in the exhibit. And then another just amazing young woman who had a heart transplant at age 18. I've connected with her family. She had gone on. She did get to go graduate high school, went to college, moved from St. Louis to Chicago, you know, was out living her life independently. Actually with her sisters to live there. She moved there to be with her sisters and just, you know, one day went into cardiac arrest. So her family is amazing and I've been working with them and her sister wrote something beautiful and named her daughter after this young woman and they're going to be represented too.
How wonderful. So I would imagine that those reunions, I mean, like Tessie said, just it gives me goosebumps, you know, just thinking about it. And I would have to imagine that part of that is just because of the intimacy that is required to to photograph, really, right? And to kind of draw these stories out.
I think you're absolutely right, because think about it again, since we didn't have social media, people didn't share this kind of stories back then. I mean, occasionally you'd see an article in a magazine, you know, something pretty private, but you know, I was their witness. They told a story. They wrote their story. I gave them a forum to speak their voice and to process an event in their lives. And I felt a very strong connection to them. Although some of them I met once or twice for a couple of hours, you know, and the ones out of town, even just once. But I sat with their stories, you know, and I've all the different years, all the the exhibitions, and just as I, you know, went through them again. So I just felt like I reconnected with a long lost relative. I mean, when I found them on social media, that was exciting. But then when I saw them in person, you know, that was just amazing for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love how you said you were just kind of a witness to their story. And I feel that way a lot about our guests on the podcast, because you're right. I mean, the dynamic has entirely changed when, with the kind of introduction of social media and people sharing as much or as little as they want on there. But I still feel like the same way, in the same way photography is, you know, we get to just really sit down and because there's a lot of kind of negative space in both podcasting and being a photographer, you know, you're sitting together, you're just sharing space together. It just allows for like a deeper connection than you can possibly have on social media, really. And I always feel so honored by them sharing their story that Leslie and I, you know, we're constantly like, wow, we just got a new best friend, you know, or a new member to the family, to the community, because just like that, like witnessing someone's story is a really, it's a humbling task. It's an honor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel absolutely honored by these women sharing it years ago and then just coming back now as adults. You know, as a teenager, you're like, sure, I'll do it, whatever. You know, I don't really think about it. But as middle age, we have families, we have careers, you know, it takes time. And so, you know, that they would do this again and really, you know, take their time, share their personal information to help other people, to inspire other people, and hopefully help themselves too. You know, I look at it as the photograph is, you know, kind of this concrete symbol of their strength and their power, you know, of the external self. And then the writing is about, you know, their story, their internal self.
Can you give us a few examples of women, just kind of a glimpse of sort of then and now?
Sure. So Paula is one, and I think we're going to put the links out. She's on the Resilient Souls Facebook page. You can see the portrait. So Paula, I had met several years ago. Obviously she was very shy and soft-spoken. Her story was about how her mother had left the family when she was 11 years old. And when we met, she was doing very well. We met through the Native American Center, and she had gotten involved with a youth group. And that had been helping her, because when it happened, she had been very bitter and isolated, probably depressed. And so, you know, through this connection, she had already helped her life, but she still was very quiet and soft-spoken. So years later, fast forward, you know, and I show up at her house after, you know, several phone calls and finally finding a time that I could get to Chicago and see her. So today she is an iron worker with four kids, you know. So to be an iron worker in a male dominated, you know, career, she said she's had to really find her voice and, you know, be bold and strong to stand up to her coworkers and to be treated equally. So that was a big shift. And it was awesome to see her, you know, with her kids and here, you know, she had her family had kind of, even though she had disintegrated in some ways with her mom leaving and, you know, her father was very close to her. She had some aunts who were really very mothering to her. So she did have the connection, but I mean, now she's got her own family and, you know, they're actually very involved in that same Native American Center and in the community. And so that was wonderful. Mm-hmm. Another one I was thinking about was a young woman, Mayana. She had moved to Boston Sydney when she was 14 years old. So not knowing English, you know, when I met her, I actually met her covering a story for a, you know, photography assignment for something else. And she was living in a teeny apartment in St. Louis City with her mom, her aunt, her grandma, her sister. I mean, they were all like kind of just in this teeny little apartment. My mom and aunt were working in factories. And, you know, today she has, well, when I caught up with her years later, first of all, she was in St. Louis. She had moved to Chicago, and her mom was still here. The aunt was still here, the grandma, but they moved out into kind of a suburban outlying area of St. Louis. And I show up, she was visiting them, show up there, and they're in these beautiful homes. The sisters live next to each other, her aunt and her mom. And their decks kind of open up. So in their backyard, they have barbecues out there. They kind of all have that kind of community, almost like a compound, you know. It was just beautiful, the American dream, you know, that the family, you know, they worked in factories. And she went on and, you know, went to college, went to graduate school. She got a master's in economics. She was befriended actually by a reporter for a different story on her, who had really helped her kind of navigate her way into getting a scholarship to a private school. And so she's doing great. She just started a family, moved back to this area, bought a house. Actually, she lives a few miles from me.
Wow.
So that was kind of another cool story.
So I want to pivot just a little bit and talk about resilience. Resilience is definitely a word that we're hearing more and more, right, here in 2016. Absolutely. And a lot of our listeners are moms, and we're reading a lot about how to raise resilient kids. Just the kids who can experience defeat and then bounce back stronger. And I guess after having, you kind of had a hunch about this, or I should give you more credit. You had a very solid handle on this 20 years ago. But after, you know, moving through this sort of journey and documenting this sort of spirit of resiliency, what do you know now to be true about being resilient and about just the human capacity for resilience?
Well, I think the human spirit, you know, is amazing. We've all heard stories where people, you know, have horrific childhoods and are doing great. But yet, on the other hand, sometimes people have something which appears maybe not as big of an obstacle, but really are not doing so well with it, or not accessing their resilience. So it is a really interesting subject. I think what helps a lot of people after doing this, after interviewing, and just from, you know, my own kind of reading, I think connection is a big piece of it, right? So having someone in your life that you are connected to, whether it's a family, you know, a community group, someone feeling connected, whether it's, you know, church or a teacher. Some of these kids, you know, did have a special teacher, someone that really they knew cared about them. And I think that's a big piece of that. I think having the ability to have a positive outlook, you know, to get perspective. And I think we can teach our kids that. We can teach our kids how to look at a situation in a more positive light. And we can also teach our kids kind of how to take steps, achievable steps, you know, so they can feel good about coming through that. I think a lot of people heal and come through things through helping other people. So, you know, there one of the women who talks about a sexual assault, she went on to her university and did kind of peer counseling and volunteered to help other people. And also faith. You know, a lot of people talk about their faith. So I think whether it's a spiritual connection, finding ways through meditation, through, you know, whatever works for you, to find ways to connect and to feel hope.
That's awesome advice. That's very like concise. I think I heard a list in there, which I love. great insight that really, you know, I wanted to ask the question because, like I said, I mean, this was something that has been a theme for you for all of these years. So many of us are, you know, been hearing about resiliency the last couple of years, but it's certainly something you've been in tune to. So I appreciate your perspective on that. Thanks for sharing.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm curious too. Like, what do you, you talked about now having, how many kids do you have?
I have one daughter who is 16 driving.
So you have one 16-year-old daughter, which is an age that, I mean, those of us who have younger daughters, slightly terrified, slightly excited, all the feelings about 16, right? But it's got to feel even more interesting for you, because not only with your kind of photojournalism that's been going on for decades, but also your work in social work. Mm-hmm. How are you parenting her different, knowing and learning all of those things about resilience than maybe you would have before kind of setting out to do this?
Mm-hmm. I'd like to think that I'm parenting her the same way I would have, but possibly not. you know, I think the buzzword back when I was starting this work was self-esteem. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, how we hear resilience, the self-esteem. That was the big thing. How do we build self-esteem in girls?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's probably the same things that we say, how do we build resilience? You know, mm-hmm. many of the things are the same, right? Fostering a positive self-image is a lot of it, mm-hmm. right? So, and of course, you know, self-expression, encouraging self-expression. And of course I wanted her to, you know, oh, isn't art great? Don't you know, you have all the art supplies? Nah, not really. She loves to write and she loves music and she plays guitar. And so she found hers, you mm-hmm. know, and she finds connections. I think being an only child too, she does very well both with peers, but also with adults, you know, so, mm-hmm. so her guitar teacher, she had an amazing connection, and you want that for your kid to find other people to kind of mentor them and mm-hmm. and connect with outside of their parents. So I encourage that. Like all mothers, all your listeners, I'm sure, we all need to work on talking positively about ourselves, never doing any negative body talk. I think that's a huge piece of this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we could talk about that another time if you like, but you know, that, I'm pretty passionate about that because in my work, like I said, I do work a lot with women and girls with body image issues, often see clients with eating disorders. So, you know, early on, some of these cognitions start. So that's really important too.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad that you brought that up. It's always a good reminder to hear that. That the way we speak about ourselves, it matters to us and to those that are watching us, for sure.
Absolutely.
So you've written a book called Photo Exploration, A Girl's Guide to Self-Discovery Through Photography, Writing, and Drawing. And I love this. We got a chance to take a look at it. And I noticed on the back cover, you have a note there that says that the exercises are meaningful and powerful for all, but that the book is recommended for girls and adolescents ages 9 through 15. So our daughters are aging into that. Your daughter just aged out.
Yeah, and that's my daughter on the back cover.
Oh, awesome. That's so great.
In 10 photos, which is actually one of the first assignments in the book, to do a collage of your life in 5 to 10 photos that represent
yes. Which, how fun. I mean, I'm 38 and I feel like that would be a great project for me to, an exercise for me to work through. But tell us a little bit about the book and specifically, you know, why girls, why that age group? Talk to us about that.
Well, as we talked about before, right, this is a time when they are very curious about, you know, how they look and how they appear to others. What I like to do is to use these activities to foster a positive self-image, right? I like to use the self-portrait to access how they feel about themselves in a positive way on the inside. So one of my favorite assignments, and is one I do in the workshops often, is to ask girls to take a picture of her true self, you know, of their true selves. So, you know, for one girl, it might be, you know, while she's playing the violin, you know, she feels really much, very much at home. So she might, you know, take a picture. And again, you can have somebody else take the picture. Mm-hmm. The idea of the selfie is really the self-portrait. So it doesn't really matter if you press the button or not. So anyway,
For another person, it could be being outside, sitting under a tree, reading a book, you know, whatever it is that their true self is. And also to experiment with other pictures, because we're not going to show our true selves to everybody, right? We're going to show them maybe to our family and to some people that we trust and we believe that we can do that with. But, you know, when they're in school, they're going to have a different kind of appearance when they're playing the role of the student, when they're playing the role, when they're seeing their grandparents, they might be a little bit different than when they're hanging out with their friends. So that's the idea of taking pictures of themselves with the different aspects of themselves.
I'm curious how much explanation is required when you ask a girl to take a picture of their true self. Is that incorporated with kind of a lesson on that introspection of like, who am I? You know, I mean, that's a huge question that we never really, I mean, we spend years and years trying to answer. So what instruction goes along with that? Or is that something that is innate to kids, but that we kind of forget later on?
Well, I think first of all, I make it very simple, you know, take a picture of a time when you really feel like you're you, like, you know, you feel really good and comfortable. So, and there's not one answer, right? So, you know, and I give examples and they get it. It doesn't take as much explanation. I think probably as adults, we overthink. Mm-hmm. they do get it. You know, we want to get it right. We want to get the right one. We're going to do the assignment correctly, you know? So I do it. And I think this is the girl and all of us can do these exercises. And I do use these same exercises for adults. I just, you know, it is for girls because mm-hmm. let's start young. Now let's start young. Mm-hmm. Let's start young. But certainly anybody could do the book, including men.
Yeah.
Sure.
And boys.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just sort of like on the edge of my seat right now. I'm like, I can't wait. I'm going to ask all my kids this weekend to do this. I think this would be such a fun. I'm just so curious about what they would come up with. I think that would be fascinating.
Good. Let me know.
I will.
Well, it's funny too. I mean, as you were talking, of course, I was thinking about like, what would I have someone take of me, mm-hmm. you know? And it's so funny because I feel like probably like in the middle of mothering, like family team huddle. But Leslie and I actually just got pictures done for this podcast, and one of our mutual friends took the pictures. And Leslie, I don't know if you remember this story, but Jenny, the photographer, was like, Tessie, you need to smile more. She was doing a solo shot with me. And I'm like, I don't love pictures when my smile's really big. Like in when I see them, you know, my eyes are almost closed. I have all these wrinkles that aren't there when I'm not smiling. And she's like, you're the smiliest person I know. It looks weird when you don't smile. And so just, I was even thinking it's so interesting because the people who know you really well probably have an idea when you look the most you. And they like pictures when you look the most you and not necessarily when you think you look the best. Does that make sense? And so mine probably would be like in the middle of mothering, and I probably would look like slightly, you know, over my head, slightly happy, slightly anxious, you know. It might not be the most striking image is I guess what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. That's okay, because, you know, we walk around, it's funny, we're funny about photographs, right? We walk around showing our face all different ways. You know, people see us all the time. But like you said, but when we're freezing it, you know, when it could be, that's what we're concerned about, when it could be, you know, seen again and again and again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so crazy. It really is like such a mind issue, right? Even, and I'm sure had you created this book and like asked people to do these exercises 20 years ago, I wonder how it would look different than it would look right now. Because 20 years ago, when I was a kid, my parents never let me take pictures of us. Like it was their camera. I had no kind of agency in what photos were taken of me, but now kids take them of themselves all the time. So it does change the dynamic.
Sure. And initially I did do this. I did these same exercises 20 years ago. What I would do is take Polaroid cameras into the groups. In fact, when the original exhibition, that's what we did, take a Polaroid camera, and then they would do, now they would only get one shot at it, you know, because the film was like, you know, $1 a picture, whatever. But they, unless there was a real technical difficulty. And so they had to work with whatever they got. And I always did preface it with, you know, we're going to keep the conversation positive. You know, I didn't allow any, you know, negative comments about how they looked. In fact, I focused on what they like about the image. And that's still kind of a rule when I do the workshop.
Yeah, the hipster in me is really excited right now. I'm like, oh, I need to get that Polaroid I've been looking for. I need to make sure to do this. But can you talk a little bit, Kathy, why you believe photography and writing, and just this answer again is something we could spend a long time talking about, but why do you think photography and writing are powerful healing tools?
Well, first of all, photography is amazing. It's magical. Let's face that, right? You know, we're here in time and we're freezing a moment in a second in time. So that's pretty cool that, you know, just photography in of itself, it's historic. We're making documentation, although, you know, again, kids today probably have, you know, a billion images taken of them, but still, it's telling our story. We're documenting our history. And then the writing piece of it, you know, lets us kind of look at the images and make sense of them. And writing lets us make sense of our lives, right? So to write about the images, and in the workbook, all of the assignments come with a set of questions. So, and the questions are about either the collage they created or the photo that they're that they took. And so it helps them kind of process and learn a little bit more about the image and themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just spending time with it, really, you know, probably just having the excuse or the assignment in front of you to just sit down and actually spend some time reflecting and thinking, I think, is maybe the first step, I guess, the first beautiful step.
Yeah. So I try to make it, you know, the assignments are supposed to be fun, but yet, you know, I'm slipping in a lot of good stuff. So a lot of kind of healthy ideas and assignments that we want to teach girls, you know, things like, you know, writing a letter about why you're thankful for your body, you know, ways you want to help your community. So trying to kind of slip in things that I think would also be good for them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, oh man, I can't imagine how powerful that is. And really, you know, we've all experienced some level of trauma in our lives. So how do you see our listeners implementing some of these healing tools in their lives? Like, how can we access some of that?
I think if it's serious trauma that has never, you know, been processed, I would recommend professional therapy. But if you're talking mm-hmm. about losses, you know, kind of general losses, whether it's, you know, divorces, grief, whatever, I think expressive techniques are great. I mean, I do a journal, and sometimes I use art, sometimes I use photos. You could do whatever you want, and it doesn't have to be done every day, but just kind of taking time to access your thoughts and your feelings. I think that's one of the best things people mm-hmm. can do. Again, some people aren't going to want to do that, and that's okay. Talking to people are fine, you know, talking to a friend, talking to, you know, a family member, maybe a religious leader, some kind of group. You know, sometimes people go to a support group, or just even like, you know, a youth group, a mom's group. Just having witnesses and having that support, I think, can be very healing. And helping other people, you know, like some of the things I talked about.
What do you think about the adult coloring trend?
I think it's such a thing, right? I think it's kind of fizzling out, but yes, I think I like it. I think it goes with us taking time to get off our social media. I think we kind of, it's funny, it comes in with all the social media, though. Like, now it wasn't just Facebook, you know, there's so many things now, and it's like, oh wait, we're just gonna stop everything right now and we're just gonna color. I think it can be very soothing. I think it can be very meditative for people.
Okay, just had to throw that in. Just curious.
I think she was looking for you to justify her obsession.
She's like, you should start doing that. Like, thank you, Kathy. You're right. I probably should start doing that.
Do you do that?
No, but I've been thinking about it.
I do. Leslie likes to catch on to trends just slightly after they're going, like, lost steam. So
no, so Yeah, we'll see. Well, I'll let you know if I start and how it goes. I like the idea of just sitting still. I have trouble just sitting still. And so I feel like if I just parked myself on a chair with my coloring book, that maybe it would be a good thing. I don't know. All right. So obviously, Kathy, you're very invested in the lives of others through not just your art, but, you know, your social work, all of it just is married together, which is such a cool thing. But tell us a bit more about what you do for you, what you do for yourself. We're big believers in self-care. So how do you make time for this in your life?
Well, I put it as a priority. I schedule it in, you know, mm-hmm. Routine. I will, you know, vary from it. I am very fortunate that I have set up my life the way it works best for me to live a balanced life. I do my clinical work for 3 very long days, and then I have 4 days to do my, you know, kind of mom household, and then also my photography projects and my workshops. So it feels pretty balanced to me. I think that's a big piece of it. And I know it's not always that easy, you know, for a lot of people. So I appreciate that. And then I make sure I have time, you know, to move, to do fun exercise that kind of is also my meditation calming, you know, swimming, biking, just being outside.
Yeah, I love that, especially because sometimes people feel like there should be more pressure to do certain things, but you said it feels good to me. It feels balanced. And maybe it wouldn't feel balanced to me, but if it feels good to you, then you know you're serving that kind of other self need, which, you know, we salute you because not everybody is. It's hard, like you said, when you're so busy. Well, yeah. Kathy, thank you so much. This went way too fast. This went way too fast for me. We for sure need to have you back on because I would love to dig into some of the other things you said. But I know our listeners are just going to love you and want to follow you on all the places, learn more about your book and your project. So tell our listeners where they can find you.
Sure. I have Facebook and Instagram. And those are my 2 social media forums. At Resilient Souls and at Photo Explorations. They both have an S at the end. So join me, talk to me, be happy to answer any questions. My website also has information, and that's clgphoto.com. It has information about the book, the workshops, the exhibit, after it opens here in St. Louis in just about 10 days. And then in 2017, I'm looking for cities for the exhibit to go to. So if an organization is interested in sponsoring it, we'd love to hear from you.
Fantastic. Well, we mm-hmm. wish you all the best with the new exhibit. And again, thanks for taking the time. This is a great conversation, Kathy.
Thank you both. I love the work you're doing. Keep doing it. And I love that you're giving moms and women a chance to tell their story.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. That we appreciate that.
Mama Bears, today we dare you to honor your story. We dare you to take some time to reflect on some of those big questions of life. The who am I? And the what makes me joyful? What makes me angry? What makes me who I am? These are big questions, and your answers will evolve and take different shapes and tones over time. But we believe that you are worth knowing and you are worth figuring out. We dare you to learn your story and take the time to express it, maybe even through art. Take that self-portrait or selfie. What would it look like? How would you capture your image? What would you do to communicate who you are to the lens? Mama Bear, you have done a lot in your life. You've survived a few things. You've made mistakes. You've had some triumphs. Your story matters and you matter. We dare you to dig into yourself and your story. And then, even in the midst of carpool duties or packing lunches or telling your kids to pack their own darn lunches, we dare you not to forget who you are.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, kids, pack your lunches. Mama's got to take her selfie and post it on Mama Bear Dares podcast page. I think this is important, you guys. I think we need to do this for ourselves.
This seems really urgent.
We laugh, you guys, but we can't wait to see it. Like, this community has given us life in so many days when we feel like we're just too overwhelmed. It's so lovely to come back and hear from so many of you who love the world, love each other, love your families. And we're so inspired by you. We really are. So we can't wait to see what you come up with, what little bit of art you can create in your own world. So again, make sure you send that to our social media. And then Leslie, we haven't reminded our listeners in a while, but make sure you're going to our Mama Bear Dares podcast.com, clicking that Amazon banner ad, because you can get all your Amazon purchases. Christmas is coming.
Oh, if you, it sure is.
Right? So if you're like me and get virtually all of your gifts off Amazon, make sure you click that link first, because it doesn't cost you anything different. It just kicks back a few loose pieces of change to Leslie and me. And
basically it's like, it's a few pieces of loose change, but also inspiration. Like, I want to know what you're getting your kids for Christmas. I want to know what you're getting your sisters.
It's such a good point. So we actually didn't know that we could see what people were buying from it, but just the other day I got on and I was like, oh, you can see what you're buying. And guess what, Leslie? Want to know what my favorite one, most recent one was?
What?
Someone bought like wood chip pellets for the grill specifically to like burn pork.
Wow.
I guess, I don't know how to do it.
But, like, pork foodie. Foodie Mama Bear. Yeah. Well done, Foodie Mama Bear.
There's a Foodie Mama Bear. So thank you. We salute you. We salute you, Woody wood chip pork person. It's amazing. Yeah, but it's so much fun. Thank you for using that. And then also, of course, remember, if you're taking road trips, Audible is still a sponsor of this podcast, and they are offering our listeners a 30-day free trial and one free audiobook download when you go to audible.com/mamabeardares. So get that for all of your traveling comfort and needs.
I love it. Find us on social media and snap those selfies. Can't wait.
Snap, snap. Shake it like a Polaroid picture. Come on now, shake it, shake, shake, shake. Shake, shake, shake.